Mornings with Mark, and we have a special guest joining us right now. She's going to be in our area for two Q&As and talks about the JFK assassination, and she'll be in San Francisco and also in Santa Cruz. Now, right in our neck of the woods, our guest will be in San Francisco in Santa Cruz this Saturday, November 24th, for a presentation between 3:30 and 5:30 put on by the Freedom Forum, and this will be at the Live Oak Grange in Santa Cruz, 1900 17th Avenue. The Warren Commission accused Lee Harvey Oswald of being John F. Kennedy's lone assassin, but Judith Verybaker, who was Oswald's secret lover, says he was made a patsy and told to keep her mouth shut. Now, after 50 years, she's written a book, Me and Lee, and is on a speaking tour. And we have her with us right now. Good morning, Judith.
Well, good morning to you. Thank you for the opportunity to speak up and defend an innocent man.
Well, you're appreciate you joining us this morning. Had a chance to hear you with Lou Rockwell the other day. And I'll tell you what, I saw Oliver Stone's movie. I've read Jim Marr's book, a number of the books about the assassination. And the theory of the lone gunman has never... It's never rung true with me. You know, through all the research I've done over the last, 30 years, listening to programs to retired FBI agents and special agents, and it never comes off as just a cut-and-dried lone assassin gunman. There are always so many questions out there that will put doubt in the minds of people. I mean, if you go beyond the official story and you start looking and listening to the testimony of people who were there, people who worked on the investigation, there's just so much that doesn't make any sense.
Well, you're absolutely right, and because it doesn't, they have to keep coming out year after year with still another attempt to try and convince the public that the official story is right and the public is wrong. Mm-hmm. Sometimes, the public just can't be fooled. And what's good about this book, I think, and it's because this is defense of Lee, but because I knew him personally, it's easy for me to sort out the lies from the truth. And one of the things I'd like to mention that I hope that people will understand is I wasn't just his lover, but I was his confidant. He confided in me. He didn't have that many people he could trust. I proved to him that he could trust me. That's in the book. And there were a lot of things he didn't want to tell me because he was afraid that it would endanger my life. I'm really grateful for the things that he didn't tell me, I suppose.
How did you meet Lee Harvey Oswald?
Well, I was brought into a project that was designed to attempt to kill Fidel Castro. Today we know the CIA has finally admitted that they used all kinds of means, even using the mafia, to try to reach and kill Fidel Castro, including things like using a botulism-laced diving suit to give to Castro. But always it could be traced back. Dr. Alton Oxner was vehemently anti-communist, and he hated Castro. He was a very passionate doctor, very famous, and very much engaged with the U.S. government in working on what they were called. He was a consultant to the Surgeon General, I'm quoting here, of the U.S. Air Force on the medical side of subversive matters. And he was always going to Washington. He was busy as he was linked to very interesting people like Murchison and so on. Now, he invited me into a cancer research project in New Orleans, and I was unaware of a lot of it, but I was very much anti-Castro. I came from Florida, and where it's filled with anti-Castro Cubans that had come mm-hmm. in, and so I was very anti-Castro, and at that time I was even anti-Kennedy.
How did you get involved in this? What was your background as far as educationally and scientific that would put you into this orbit?
Well, when I was 16, I invented a brand new way. I invented a new way to get magnesium out of seawater, and it sent me to the International Science Fair. But at the same time, because my grandma died, I'd been working for some time, ever since a CIA operative named Knut Mikkelsen, who had been a spy in the underground against Hitler, inspired me with his talk about spying and everything. But he was a scientist. And he introduced me to sources like at Oak Ridge and other places, I was working on cancer on the side. And I actually managed, after my grandmother died, I got a lot of professional help. But I managed in a relatively primitive lab. It was my own lab, underneath a high school stadium, no less. I gave cancer to mice in only 7 days. And I had to go and actually crash the Science Writers Seminar, the fourth annual one, where the most important science researchers, writers and reporters were interviewing some of the best cancer research scientists in the world, and including three important men. One was Dr. Deal. He was the vice president of the American Cancer Society for Research. And there was Dr. George E. Moore, who was running the prestigious Roswell Park Institute. And then they brought in Dr. Alton Oxner. They flew him in to meet me. He had met me once before when I showed him my work with cancerous fish briefly. And on top of that, two Nobel Prize winners. That was Sir Robert Robinson, mm-hmm. Nobel Prize in Chemistry, and with him, Dr. Harold Urey.
Now,
these people all together saw my work, and I was put on a fast track of training.
Okay.
And I was assigned a particular a matter to make cancer more deadly. So I'm brought into New Orleans. I get there 2 weeks early and meet Lee Oswald. We don't think it was by accident anymore.
Was this in 1963?
Yes, when I finally met Lee and was in New Orleans.
What time of the year was that?
It was spring with the birds singing and the flowers out. It, so, April 26, 1963.
So 6 to 7 months before the assassination.
Yes.
Okay.
And I was in contact with Lee the majority of that time. We were separated for 70 days, but during that time, even then, we were telephonically connected most of the time. And, oh, dear God, what he was going through. People don't know what a wonderful man he was, how much he loved his country and everything. It's in the book. I am just praying that people will read it. You know, they can get it at meandlee.com. And I'm really glad that you've given me this opportunity to speak up.
But we were told that Lee Harvey Oswald was a communist, that he was anti-American. And that he had, you know, traveled to the Soviet Union as a guest of the Communist Party, and was actually a security threat. I mean, that's the official story.
Oh, I wish I had more time to tell you what the real man was. We had spies. People that should remember this young man entered the Soviet Union. He was only 19. He was a Marine. He had been at Tsugi, where the CIA trains agents. They also had the U-2 base there. He was someone whose hero was Herbert Philbrick of I Led Three Lives, which is a TV series about a real FBI informant who penetrated communist cells and reported back to the FBI. We have Lee Oswald going to the American embassy there in Moscow, throws down his passport, says, I'm giving up my citizenship. I am going to tell the Soviets everything I know about the U-2 project and all the codes and everything I learned as a radar operator. Just to give you an idea of what I'm talking about, imagine if today someone went into the embassy in Iraq, you know, U.S. embassy, and said, I'm going to tell everybody in Iran that I can. I'm going to Iran. I'm going to tell them all about the drone project because I was on the drone project so they can shoot those drones down. Now, do you think they'd let him out of the building? Well, that's what they did. Now, only let him out of the building, but more than 2.5 years later, when he comes back with a wife and child in tow, they give him his passport back. They give him a loan so he can come back to the U.S. They don't arrest him when he returns to the U.S. He goes on with his merry life, doing anti-Castro things for a little while with Guy Bannister, and then going into a pro-Castro stance. This man was an operative for the CIA. He told me he had been loaned to the CIA by the Office of Naval Intelligence. And he was a patriot who loved his country, but it was easy to frame him. Lee told me, you know, he said he couldn't advance in the what he called the company, that's the CIA, because he hadn't come back in a coffin. They didn't trust him because they wondered if he turned. And he was called expendable.
Judith,
and he could be blamed.
I want to ask you about Lee Harvey Oswald's death and also the death of Jack Ruby, because that gets into the research that you did on creating cancer.
Yes.
And we'll continue in just a moment here. It's 8:21. Traffic and weather together. There's debris on the roadway from an earlier accident at 101 and Crazy Horse Canyon Road in North Monterey County. There's also a non-injury accident up on Highway 17 at Glenwood Drive. And there is also, looks like, portions of a tree branch in the roadway, Highway 1 northbound at Park Avenue in Santa Cruz County. The weather forecast today, it is going to be partly cloudy once the morning showers burn off, and our highs today will be in the mid-60s. This Sunday, the 49ers travel to the Superdome to take on the New Orleans Saints.
Empty backfield, shotgun Smith. Saints bring extra man. Alex going to boot to his left and run. He's going to run at 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown. What a play.
49er football is brought to you in part by Green Rubber Kennedy Ag and Sam Linder Honda Cadillac in the Salinas Auto Mall. The 49er pregame show goes on the air at 12:25, and the kickoff is at 1:25 p.m. on Fox News Radio, 1460 AM and 101.1 FM.
The YP.com website is your local search engine. If you're looking for a good restaurant, it can help you find the right one nearby with ratings and reviews. Or if your car breaks down, you can use the YP app to find the closest repair shop. Or maybe you're just looking for something to do on a Friday night. Well, it has great local coupons for all sorts of things in your area. No matter what, when, or where, if you're looking for something, YP Local Search can help you find it. So go to YP.com or download the app to search local, find local, and save local.
Hi, it's Joan Rivers. No, I'm not dead. So let me tell you something. Staying funny and gorgeous may seem like a cakewalk, but it's hard work. Sometimes I need a boost to be my best. That's why I drink SK Energy Shots. No jitters, no crash, just a smooth rush of energy that tastes great. I have to stay at the top of my game, and I do it the old-fashioned way. And I've never slept my way to the top. But it's not too late to start. Who do you know?
New SK Energy Shots. Powerful, pure energy. Available at GNC, CVS, and your local retailer.
Give a garden. You want to give one special gift. It shows that you love what they do. It gives them cheer all through the year. You always hear, thank you.
Give a garden.
So, Dr. Morisi, as an economist, you're saying business leaders don't understand the true cost of documents?
They just don't get it. Unmanaged printers and MFPs, dysfunctional document workflow, it's profit-killing chaos.
So what's the answer?
Kyocera. With intelligent printers and MFPs, customized apps and services, Kyocera helps companies run more profitably.
Peter, Dr. Marisa. So go from chaos to Kyocera.
Hey, that's my line.
Doctor. Bring order to the chaos with Dataflow Business Systems. Dataflow Business Systems knows that document imaging today is more than just innovative printers and MFP. It's about impeccable customer service and the knowledgeable staff. Dataflow Business Systems will assess the current document workflow and help you implement the best document solutions. Ole Gomez has served the Central Coast for over 22 years. Reach him and his staff at 831-759-8760. 831-759-8760. Or start dbs.com.
You're listening to Mornings with Mark on Fox News Radio 1460 AM and 101.1 FM.
We are back at 8:26. Judith Vary Baker is visiting with us. She was Lee Harvey Oswald's secret lover. She has a new book out called Me and Lee, and she'll be in Santa Cruz this Saturday between 3:30 and 5:30 at the Freedom Forum at the Santa Cruz Live Oak Grange, 1900 17th Avenue. Judith, welcome back to the program.
Well, thank you very much. I'm glad to be back.
Yeah, we've only got about 4 minutes left here, okay. So I've got a lot of things I want to try and cover in a short period of time. I had a caller on the line who had the question, and this is regarding what a lot of us believe to be a cover-up of the JFK assassination. What did Bobby Kennedy know about this? And if he knew anything about it, being an assassination by inside forces, not Lee Harvey Oswald, why would he not have made a big deal about this?
Okay, first of all, we have John Kennedy, who's publicly executed. I mean, right in the open here with the Secret Service moving away from him, standing away. And Vince Palomares, as a researcher, has come across with a lot of information about that. We have powerful government forces, Lyndon Johnson appointing people who hated Kennedy to the Warren Commission. Bobby Kennedy had his phone disconnected minutes after J. Edgar Hoover announced to him that his brother had been shot and was dead, and who announced it to him with a cold voice. Bobby Kennedy was locked out, and he had to do some damage control. And the way I look at it is, he knew who Lee Oswald was, as a matter of fact. And he even said, you know, one of your boys did it. He told that to the CIA. He understood what was going on. He knew about the operations against Castro and so on that summer. What he didn't know, of course, is how extensive this whole operation was and how many people were involved. He had many children, just like almost everybody among the Kennedys. And the problem he was facing is that he needed to stay alive if he possibly could. So they did a lot of things at that time to not involve themselves and their families. But when he ran for president, shortly before he was murdered, he said something that he shouldn't have. He said he was going to reinvestigate, open up that investigation again to find out who really killed his brother.
So he probably sealed his death warrant with that comment.
I believe he did.
Yeah. Yes. Now, why did Jack Ruby kill Lee Harvey Oswald? We were told that the official story, the sanitized version, is Jack Ruby was a patriot who was so outraged at the killing of the American president that he had to rush right down to the Dallas police station and shoot that guy before he would get off on an insanity plea or something.
You know, I know we have very little time left, so I'll try to compress this as much as I can. Jack Ruby knew Lee Oswald, knew him from late childhood. He was most uneager to do anything to harm him because of a long association. He knew he was innocent. You find that police, at least one phone call, we know there were two, at least one, his voice was identified saying, you know, we're going to shoot this man if you bring him out. You know, he did his best, but here's the clue. And this is new information nobody has. Stuff in the book, there's a lot in there. We have 72 five-star reviews out of 82, and they say how the dots are connected. This is a good example of dots that can be connected. When this patriot, okay, who's in the mafia, comes into the garage to shoot poor Lee, all right, whose protection, even though there are 700 Dallas police there, you know, everybody's getting out of the way who might get shot. And the guy holding on to Lee, he's wearing a white suit, so he won't be shot. You find out that they're using as an example of his impulsivity that he had his dog Sheba in the car. Well, you wouldn't leave your dog in the car if you had planned this assassination. But here's the fact. Sheba was never alone. In the movie JFK, you can see Jack Ruby carrying Sheba and her mate, two dachshunds in one arm and one in the other, and carried them everywhere. Where was the other dog? You know, Dave Ferry was trying to explain to me, because he knew I'd met Jack Ruby. He didn't know. They'd only called him Sparky Rubenstein, so I couldn't understand why he was giving me so many excuses for why Jack Ruby had shot Lee. He said it was a mercy killing so he wouldn't be tortured to do a confession and so on. But one thing he mentioned, he said he was forced to do it because they had stolen his other dog, and they said they were going to torture the dog to death and cut his body parts all in little pieces, and if he didn't kill Lee Oswald, and they were going to do the same thing to his sister Eva, and they were going to cut him up and dismember him if he did not shoot Lee Oswald.
Yeah. And then, of course, he died in prison in 1967 of cancer, and the cancer he got.
A very fast-moving cancer. They try now to say that he had this cancer a long time. He was going to be having a new trial. As soon as that new trial is announced, we have a problem. All the bad stuff about the Kennedy assassination that had been covered up, it could all come to the surface again in a new trial.
Right.
All of a sudden, he develops a cough. A doctor had come in from Chicago. That's a very key place. He said he had been injected with cancer cells. They said he was crazy. They put him in Parkland Hospital for a cough, put him in the X-ray room. We have had documents at one time before they were stolen that he was in there for 45 minutes, a long time if you read the book. And here's the crux of it all. They announced the day that they look at those x-rays and say he has pneumonia.
Right.
But the very next day, they announced he has an advanced cancer and he's dying. That cancer killed him 28 days later, just as it did for a prisoner at Jackson Hospital. He said, and he told Al Maddox, who was his guardian officer, police officer there, he had been injected with cancer cells. He saw what we had been doing. He was in New Orleans. He knew it. You had to use this big needle to do it. It's painful. He knew it had to be injected into the bloodstream or into the kidney.
So he went
through some painful shots, and he died of a vicious cancer. I have been told, I don't have the original records, but from trusted sources, that when they had examined the kind of lung cancer that he had, it came from the pancreas. Okay? This was pancreatic cancer that had metastasized to the lungs. But on the autopsy, you find out that Jack Ruby's pancreas was not cancerous.
Wow. There are so many still remaining questions. I wish we had more time, Judith. There's also questions about so many of the people that were eyewitnesses to the assassination in Dealey Plaza. A number of those people died over the next 10 years under suspicious circumstances. You know, these were people who actually saw what happened and would testify in ways that were inconvenient.
My career in cancer research was completely demolished.
Yeah.
I was told to keep my head down. It took me 25 years to get my first degree. What happens to witnesses, it's dreadful.
Yeah.
And I have to live in exile. I've come here to the U.S. I can't even see my family while I'm here. I hope people go to meandlee.com, get the book, see what happened. It will connect the dots.
All right.
You'll
be speaking in Santa Cruz at the Live Oak Grange this Saturday between 3:30 and 5:30 p.m. Our guest has been Judith Very Baker. Judith, thank you so much for your time this morning.
Well, God bless you, and I hope our country, we get it back.
All right. Thanks again. Judith Very Baker with us this morning. 8:34, we'll take a break and be back in just a moment.